All right, Alexander, let's talk about the Russian economy. And we can also talk about, we should talk about Russian oil exports and how everything is going with the Russian oil industry. Are the strikes that are hitting Russia pretty much on a daily basis now, are they affecting oil exports? Are they achieving their goal, which is to diminish Russia's oil export revenues? There was an article in the Associated Press which said that while the drone strikes are causing chaos and they're causing environmental damage, they're not managing to hit Russia's revenue from oil exports. So that was the Associated Press, which is not friendly to Russia at all. So they had that admission. Anyway, let's discuss what's happening in general with the Russian economy and focus in on everything that's happening with oil.
Well, let's indeed actually let's actually start with the Russian economy, but then let's look at the whole situation with energy and oil markets and all that, because of course the two are very closely interconnected. To answer your question, we've now had information data, to be precise, about volumes, Russian oil that's been exported by volume, the actual volume of oil exported. And it's come from the Russian government directly, from the finance minister, who was Anton Siluanov. And he has said that the volume of Russian oil exported in April was the same as in March. In other words, there's been no decline. I mean, there's not been an increase, but neither has there been a decline. What there has been is a jump in the price. And he says that the extra revenue from the increase in from the increase in price in April has enabled the Russians now to pay off the deficit in their budget that they had in March. So April, because they got more revenue from oil sales in April, they've used that basically to pay off the deficit that they had in March. Now, they also had a much bigger deficit in January, and they had a large deficit in February, and those deficits are still there. You'd need several months of high oil sales to clear those deficits. But anyway, that is the position. At the moment, the Russians are able to export oil. At least the latest figures say that they're succeeding in exporting oil. I've said this in many places, many times now. These attacks on the oil storage system, and bear in mind, what Russia mostly exports, as what most oil exporting nations mostly export, is crude oil, not refined oil. Refined oil in Russia is mostly intended for domestic consumption, though the Russians do export diesel oil, for example. But in terms of crude oil, the attacks on the storage systems in places like Tuapse, for example, have not had any big impact, at least not for the moment. And in terms of oil refineries, the attacks on refineries in Russia, I've heard no reports anywhere in Russia of shortages of refined oil products, petrol or diesel either. So, yes, these can be incredibly spectacular attacks. They can have very significant environmental consequences. But as we discussed during the previous wave of Ukrainian attacks on Russian refineries in the summer, in terms of an energy industry, an oil and gas industry as big as the Russian, these are pinpricks. The other thing that the Russians have, by the way, confirmed is that even as the European Union has announced that this is going to be the last year that it's going to import LNG from Russia. They've actually massively ramped up buying of LNG from Russia in the first few weeks of this year. So apparently that is now going to tail off, not because the Europeans aren't still placing or wanting to place orders for LNG from Russia, but because following the instruction from Putin that was made some weeks ago, it's the Russians who are going to stop sales of LNG to Europe. Just say.
Are they going to stop it completely, or?
Yes.
Or
yes.
They're just going
the intention is
it because
go on.
Is it because of contracts have run out, or?
Yeah, contracts are, LNG sales are often done on short-term contracts. Okay. At least the Russian ones are, because of the effect of the sanctions. But Putin, at some weeks ago, after the EU imposed sanctions saying that they would stop importing LNG from Russia in 2027, he said, why should we wait until 2027? We have all sorts of customers, potential customers in Asia. The time has come to focus on those and to forget about Europe. And that the decision to stop LNG sales should be made as soon as possible. And that does appear to be happening. The Russians seem to be, this surge in LNG sales to Europe was basically the tail end of the long energy partnership, the natural gas set partnership between Europe and Russia that extends back to the 1960s. By late spring, early summer, it will be over. There will be no more LNG going to Europe from Russia anymore, just as there is no LNG going to Europe from Qatar. They will be thrown back entirely on the United States.
Does that include oil? Is Russia going to cut off oil? Because there were talk. Oil. I mean, there was a statement that the news that they were going to cut off the oil to Berlin via the north part of the Druzhba. Yes. I don't know if that's been confirmed yet. But
yes, it has. The Russians again are saying that this is all because of technical problems and that this isn't a permanent decision. But everybody can see that it is. And that it is all, everything, as they say in these things, is now connected. The Russians are ending the energy relationship with Europe. And they're finding plenty of customers in Asia. The big news, which I discussed extensively in a program that I did, is that China has now given an instruction, a direct order from the Chinese government to Chinese refineries. These are not just the small teapot refineries that people are talking about, but the big refineries, the big state-owned refineries. China says, from now on, just buy oil wherever you can. Don't waste time thinking or wondering or speculating about American sanctions. Just buy oil. If the Americans come for you, we, the Chinese government, will take action to protect you. So we're going to see a further ramp up of oil imports, and by the way, eventually gas imports, by China from Russia. And this is completely unsurprising because, of course, the United States has been happily telling everybody that one of the reasons it's been taking all these actions against Venezuela and Iran is in order to stop oil sales from these countries to China. So, of course, the Chinese are now taking precautions. They are committing now fully to an oil and energy partnership with Russia, and this is a strategic decision. But other Asian countries are now stepping in. So both Indonesia and Malaysia and the Philippines, three countries, have made long-term contracts with the Russians. And interestingly, so has Japan. Japan has now started to increase purchases of oil from Russia, from Sakhalin, to be precise. And apparently this is not, in fact, not apparently, it definitely is not subject any longer to the G7 oil price cap. So the Asians are buying Russian oil. The Indians have doubled purchases of Russian oil between February and March. So there is no shortage of customers. What's happening is that the Russians are reducing their export volumes to Europe to zero, and they're increasing their export volumes to Asia accordingly. They're currently getting a high price for that oil, but the overall volumes are the same.
Doesn't Russia consider Japan as a hostile country because it was providing weapons to Ukraine?
Yes. Yes.
I think Indonesia, Philippines, I don't think they're in that category, but I do believe that Japan was categorized as a hostile.
Yes. And in fact, Japan has recently passed a law which relaxes the rules for Japan to export weapons. So the Russians brought that up, and apparently they got an assurance from Japan, which you can treat as skeptically as you wish, probably very skeptically, but they got an assurance from Japan that Japan has no plans at the moment to sell any weapons to Ukraine. I doubt they will, actually, not because the Japanese are going to feel bound by this agreement, because of course they won't, but because at the present time, Japan is also in the throes of its own rearmament drive. And I think it wants all the weapons it can produce for itself rather than for export. Just saying.
A rearmament drive for a war with China.
With China, exactly.
For which Russia's going to provide the energy for Japan's rearmament drive.
Yes, yes. Well, right. The Chinese, of course, ramping up oil too. We can discuss that at leisure.
The EU was going to cut Russian energy full Russian energy cut by the end of 2026, I believe.
That's right, yeah.
So 2026 was one phase, and then 2027 was another phase.
Yes, but as I said, the Russians are preempting it because they're going full blast to do it as soon as possible. The Russians at the moment, by the way, are becoming more confident about economics altogether. We've had revisions for the figures for January and February. Remember, there was the shock GDP contraction of 2.2% year on year in January. That has now been revised down to 1.8%. And the February contraction has also been revised down. Now, in March, the economy rebounded and began growing. And the early estimates is that growth in March, year on year, was 1.8%. So the overall contraction of the economy in the first quarter comes to 0.3%. Which essentially is not real contraction or recession territory. It's stagnation. Now, the expectation is that as inflation falls and interest rates fall, we will see a return to growth. We are likely to get growth in the Russian economy this year. And the extra money from oil and gas revenue will cover the budget shortfalls. So longer term, if oil prices remain high, if the Strait of Hormuz remains closed, and we see a global recession, then in that case, that's going to impact Russia too. And the Russians are saying so. And they say this isn't ultimately good for us either. But in the short term, at least for this year, it looks like they're covered.
Will the collective West, the United States and Europe, will they allow Russian tankers or tankers carrying Russian oil, will they allow them to reach their destination?
Well, that's a very good question, actually. I mean, bear in mind that some of this oil, some of the tankers will be using the so-called Northern Sea Route. So they'll be going from the Arctic, that's Russian-controlled, If they're going to China, they can go directly from Russian territorial waters to Chinese territorial waters. It's going to be very challenging to stop that, to put it mildly. But the Russian oil export trade is basically long been organized to sell oil to Europe. And that means that the major oil terminals are located mostly in the Baltic Sea, around 60%, I believe, and also in the Black Sea. And there's a lot of oil terminals in the Black Sea, too upsetting, of course, one of them. So for the moment, there is no talk. There's been no direct action so far of creating a sea blockade of Russia. And the Russian Navy has indeed been escorting tankers. We discussed this some time ago with the export of the fact that two Russian tankers or two tankers carrying Russian oil passed through the North Sea, and the Royal Navy was supposed to seize them, and they turned up and they found a Russian Navy frigate there protecting the tankers, and they backed off. So for the moment, that is the situation. But there's going to be harassment. There's going to be attacks on tankers. They're going to seize tankers whenever they can. There's going to be all of that kind of thing. But it's not yet at anything like the kind of level that would be needed to not to interfere with, to affect export volumes of Russian oil. And it obviously falls far short of a sustained blockade. I don't myself think the Americans want it. I think that the Americans, without whom this is impossible, are probably calculating that if they were to go down this route, there would be an even bigger surge in energy prices. And at least before the midterms, I don't think that's what the Trump administration wants. We now know that the two Russian tankers that went to Cuba had naval escorts, even though they were invisible because they were submarines, and the US Navy did not interfere with them. And for the moment, at least, that seems to be the position. If things start to heat up in the summer, if we start to see, growing desperation and alarm start to build up in Europe about Russian energy sales and all that, and it begins to finally hit home that Ukrainian drone attacks are not achieving what they're supposed to, then maybe we will start to see a more aggressive action. But then, of course, the Europeans need to think about something else, which is that the Asian producers, Asian customers, India, Japan, the Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, ultimately Singapore, all of these countries, they're going to be furious. They're going to start complaining to the Europeans about it because this is affecting now their oil trade. So there are diplomatic and political repercussions as well, though with the diplomatic genius Kaya Kallas in charge of European foreign policy, it's perhaps questionable whether the Europeans are thinking that far ahead.
Yep, a lot of the Asian countries that you named are also client states, puppets of the United States. Yeah. I mean, the Europeans are absolutely puppets of the United States. So I think the Trump White House, on the one hand, is absolutely concerned about the price of oil. And there's probably parts of the Trump White House, or there are certain times, maybe even hours in the Trump White House, the way Trump acts with the price of oil, where he's saying, look, let's get the Russian oil out there in order to keep the price of oil down as we ramp up and escalate and attack Iran. So there's that kind of thinking in the Trump White House. But there's also the other side to all of this, which is the part of the Trump White House, which absolutely wants to blockade Russia, absolutely wants to destroy the Russian facilities, the refineries. They want to get rid of all of that. And they're the ones that are greenlighting Europe, NATO, Ukraine, and assisting Europe, NATO, and Ukraine to attack those refineries or to send naval drones to hit the tankers, like what happened the other day. So, I mean, the Trump White House seems to be playing this strange balancing act where when they see the oil price go too high, then they say, okay, let's try to calm things down, whether it's with Iran, whether it's with trying to get more oil out into the market. Let's try to keep that price as low as possible, preferably under $100. They've not been succeeding in that. And then there are other times where the Trump White House is saying, Zelensky, go at it. Smash those tankers. Drones, absolutely. Fly over European airspace and hit the facilities on the Baltic Sea. Yeah, I mean, it's that strange policy of the Trump White House to try and figure out a way to manage the price of oil while attacking and destroying Russia's energy sector.
Well, you're
trying
not only,
to destroy it.
You're not only absolutely right about that. We could put names to some of the people. So obviously, the hardliners in the intelligence agencies, the CIA, the military, who many sections of the US military still very committed to Ukraine, by the way. So they're advocating a very aggressive approach against Russia. But in the economic departments of the US government, there's also a clear division. I mean, the Commerce Department are people who absolutely do want to see as low a price of oil as possible. They're worried about economic activity in the United States, about the stability of the global economy. You also have people, I'm guessing now, people like Susie Wiles, who are worried about the elections in November, who are worried about the overall political situation. But then you have the US Treasury. Scott Bessent clearly doesn't like the Russians, just as he doesn't like the Chinese. And besides, the US Treasury Department, structurally very committed to taking as hard a line against Russia as possible. Remember, it is Treasury that imposes sanctions. There's a whole department of people in the US Treasury who spend all their time coming up with new sanctions and imposing the sanctions and enforcing the sanctions. And if you worked in government, you know that when a bureaucracy exists to do something like that, that bureaucracy is always going to be advocating for more and more sanctions because it increases its bureaucratic heft within the overall governmental system. And besides Treasury, the US Treasury, I mean, they will be looking at the situation in a different way from, say, the Commerce Department. They will be saying, well, higher price of oil means more revenue because it's more revenue from the oil industry, which is big in the United States. So let's actually push. We want the higher price because that boosts the oil industry within the United States and it helps us with the budget. Provided, of course, it doesn't go too high, because if it goes too high and taxes from the rest of the economy fall, well, what you have won on the swings, you're going to lose on the roundabouts. So you have all of these debates going on, and there's ideology, there's self-interest, there's bureaucratic self-interest, there's money, there's the force of inertia, there's people like Lindsey Graham who continue advocating as hard a line on Russia as possible, and all of this going on. So absolutely, you cannot, if you're in Moscow, and you are wise about these things, you are not going to assume that the situation is going to remain stable and that the administration, the United States, is going to hold off from putting pressure on you indefinitely. And you could see some people within the Russian government, people like Patrushev, who is in charge of Russia's shipbuilding industry and overall supervises the building up of its merchant fleet, and who is also responsible in some way for supervising Russia's naval shipbuilding program. He openly advocates, in fact, he's been the main organizer of the naval convoy system. And he will continue to take a hard line on all of these issues. And of course, there are other people within the Russian energy, political, economic system who will say to themselves this, well, look, if the Americans and the Ukrainians and the Europeans do limit our ability to export oil, they can never stop it entirely, because we're still going to be able to export oil from our far east ports and our Arctic ports. What they're going to achieve is a overall reduction in the amount of oil that is traded. That's going to put up prices even higher, and it will be like 2022 all over again. We're going to make up the difference because of the high oil price from what we're going to lose in the export volumes. So there's all these very complicated, very tricky decisions that are going to have to be made. But overall, my sense is that the Russians feel that their position at the moment is strong. There was a wobble earlier this year because prices went very low, and there were large amounts of oil being traded, and there was a bigger than expected deficit in January, and GDP figures in January looked bad, but things have stabilized. They were already stabilizing before the energy crisis, before the attack on the 28th of February. The situation of the economy overall looks stable. The situation with the budget looks stable. There's lots of uncertainties ahead. Perhaps, possibly, if there's a global economic crisis, they're going to have a whole new set of problems to worry about by the end of this year. But for the next few months, their budget is covered and their economy is stable. And that's probably as far as anybody can plan in this very complicated global situation that we are in. So that's, in my opinion, the overall situation with the Russians at the moment. We should not underestimate the importance, by the way, of China making a decision that it is from now on going to disregard sanctions by the United States in the energy sector. I've written about this and I've discussed this. If China moves from a position where it doesn't approve of American sanctions, but it doesn't go head out to undermine and destroy them, which is the sort of uneasy situation we've been seeing up to now, well, people like Scott Bessent of the Treasury Department can go on imposing sanctions, and they do have a certain effect. If China makes a decision that from now on, China will not observe US sanctions and will in fact oppose them, and will tell countries around the world, you have to make a choice. Either you go along with American sanctions, or you trade with us. You can't do both at the same time. If we get into that kind of situation, and we seem to be starting to head towards there, then the whole sanctions regime collapses. And it is the end of sanctions, because more countries currently have to trade with China than they have to trade with the United States. That's the reality.
I think that was a huge story that's getting very underreported. I know you covered it on your video yesterday. I briefly covered it on my video as well. I mean, I understood. Obviously, my analysis was much less detailed and analytical than yours. But I understood that this was a huge deal.
No.
Right? I mean, it's a big deal.
It's a huge
deal. And when you listen to China's statement, this is my final question to you. When you listened to China's statement, it was obvious. We're not going to let, I'm summarizing what they said. We're not going to let the United States infringe on our right to trade.
Yes. Yes.
Our legal, international law, whatever you want to call it, our right to trade. We're not going to let the United States do this to us. So going forward, companies are not going to obey the U.S. sanctions.
Yes.
Right? That's a summary of China's message.
Yes.
We'll see if they enforce this. I think they are. Why would they put out this message? Right. So comment on that. But going off of China's statement, how come Russia doesn't issue the same statement?
Yeah.
How come Russia doesn't say any country, I don't care, the United States, Sweden, Ukraine, Estonia, UK, any country that touches Russian oil. I don't care if the oil is on a ship from Mozambique. I don't care if the oil is on a ship with a Cyprus flag. I don't care.
Yeah.
Any country that impedes or infringes on our right to trade our goods and services is going to get zapped.
Yes.
Right? I mean, Russia is a superpower.
Yes.
Russia is a nuclear superpower. Russia is a military superpower. Okay, it's not at the level of China.
No,
right? That's obvious. That's clear. But how come Russia doesn't issue the same type of strong statements as China does, so they can put an end to this on again, off again blockade? The drone strikes hitting their refineries, all these things. How come they just don't come out as China has done and say, look, if you mess around with our right to trade our goods and services, we're going to react in a very big way?
There's a very straightforward explanation to this, which is that they don't feel strong enough. They haven't felt strong enough up to now to make a statement like that. China is the world's greatest trade country. I mean, it exports far more goods than anyone else. It imports large volumes of goods today. No part of the world can function any longer without trade with China. With Russia, it is not the same. Russia does not have the same central importance in the world, in the global trade system. But now, if China makes this decision and sticks by it, you are going to see the Russians, and this I'm absolutely sure about, you're going to see the Russians follow in China's slipstream. Already, we've had statements from the Russians. I mean, they said back in 2023 that any country that observes the West's oil price gap, the G7 price gap, it doesn't buy Russian oil, full stop. So, I mean, they said that then. They've sort of stuck to it, but that was the position they took about it. And I think now, with that decision that Putin announced a few weeks ago about ending all further trade with any all further exports of energy products to Europe, you could see that they're starting to tiptoe in that direction. But I mean, the simple fact, and this is the reality, is that Russia does not have the economic sway that China does. Russia may be a superpower in terms of its military capabilities and its diplomatic reach, but as a trading power, it is not remotely on the level of China, or indeed, by the way, the United States. And that is the reality.
But why allow yourself to be bullied or allow your ships to be seized? They're not Russian ships that carry your products. Yeah. Why allow them to be seized and boarded?
Yeah.
For example, what happened the other day with the Swedish military, for example.
Yes, yes.
And I understand that after a couple of days, they release the ships and all of these things. I understand that. But why allow it to happen?
Well, indeed. I think, again, this is where it's more a case of the Russians getting their act together. I mean, Patrushev has been talking about the need to establish naval convoys. He first brought this up a year ago. When I say a year ago, I think it was late summer of 2025. He said that the West is moving towards a naval blockade of our Baltic ports and that it's going to start seizing our ships or ships that trade with us. And I remember a lot of people saying at the time, oh, you know, that's Patrushev. He's a known notorious hardliner. It's not going to happen. Well, he was proved right. He's been busy organizing these convoys. Bear in mind that Russian Navy might not have been entirely keen on doing this because it diverts them from other tasks. I mean, you know, the Russian Navy has its own routines, its own, you know, the work it does on an everyday basis, you know, tracking NATO submarines, conducting exercises in the Arctic, all of those sort of things. And it means also keeping ships at sea for extended periods, which is expensive and is hard on the crews and hard on the crew, on the families of the crews. So all of this might have made it difficult to organize these convoys, but the Russians, step by step, in their usual slow, methodical way, are getting there. I'm going to make a prediction. I think by the end of the year, we're going to see a lot more of this naval convoys and that kind of thing taking place. And we're going to see a different pattern of world trade, by the way. We're going to start to see increasing breakdowns in the system of globalist, I'm not saying global trade, but globalist WEF type trade. Definitely. The Indonesians are now saying that they are thinking of doing what the Iranians do. And just as the Iranians exact tolls for ships that pass through the Strait of Hormuz, the Indonesians are saying, well, maybe we should start thinking about doing that with the Strait of Malacca.
To hurt China.
Well, it would hurt China.
The United States is getting Indonesia to do that specifically to hurt China. That's why I say these countries are also, I mean, is Indonesia BRICS?
Indonesia is in BRICS.
You see, it's in BRICS, but it's also a puppet of the United States which is interesting. Like the UAE.
It's very confused. Absolutely. Yeah. All of this. So all of this is going to be going on. We are going to start to see, as I said, navies becoming much more aggressive in both in asserting rights. We're going to move from a world of sanctions, I think American sanctions. That world is ending, but we're going to see something completely different, which is that the great powers, China, Russia, the United States, over time, India too, are going to start dominating world trade because they're the countries with powerful navies and they will be the people who will use these navies in order to protect shipping and shipping in their own interests. And that's the world we're going to start moving towards.
I think we're already kind of there.
Trump is announcing it. Trump said, we're
pirates. Exactly. And everyone was clapping. Exactly. He's like, yeah, we're pirates.
We're pirates.
And everyone's applauding. And I think we're there. I think that China and Russia still believe that we have some sort of UN, international law, maritime
clause, and all that. I think they're slow to realize where we are. That world is dying, and it's dying very fast. As I said, by the end of the year, I suspect it will be dead. Sanctions will be dead, and so will, because sanctions are only relevant in a system of globalist trade where everybody trades with everybody else. That world is ending. As I said, it's going to be a question of great powers controlling their own trading systems. And by the way, the region of the world that is going to be the industrialized, developed region of the world that is going to be far and away the worst affected is, of course, going to be Europe, because Europe does not have powerful navies and it has depended heavily on imports. And of course, it's quarreled with the great power closest to itself that might have helped it through this challenge, which is, of course, Russia.
I wonder how Europe's going to react if Russia does take a harder line with the seizing of their ships by European countries, by European militaries. I wonder if Europe sees it as an opening for them to get into a conflict with Russia, to provoke a conflict with Russia, right? Russia takes a hard line. Europe says, great, that's what we've been striving for. Let's continue to seize ships. And that way we can provoke Russia into a war. I mean, that's what Zelensky's been gunning for 4 years now. That's what the Europeans want. So I wonder if they're going to see this actually as an opportunity. But then again, if you're Russia, what do? You're going to have to protect your international, your trading rights and your rights for international maritime trade. You're going to have to protect that. So, I mean, Russia's in kind of a difficult position in a way.
Absolutely, of course. Now, some European countries are going to respond in exactly the way that you've described. But always the problem the Europeans have is capabilities. Now, the Russians do not have a navy which is as powerful or has the kind of global reach that the US Navy does, and which the Chinese Navy is rapidly acquiring. But they do have a navy that is much more powerful than that of all of the European countries. And there has been no country that has been more aggressive in its rhetoric about seizing Russian ships than Britain. And it was very interesting that the moment the Russian Navy appeared protecting ships, the mood in London turned to shock. And they basically said, goodness, what can we do? And they backed off. And the latest reports say that the British government has now dropped the idea entirely of seizing Russian ships. So, it could be that being forced into strong action will actually, in the end, expose all of these European threats as bluff. We'll see.
All right.
I mean, France has a stronger navy, and maybe with Macron there might be more problems. But that's the reality at the moment.
All right. We will end the video there, theduran.locals.com. We are on X, Rumble, and Telegram. Go to Durant Shop, pick up some merch, look for us on Substack, and like this video, share this video, and subscribe to this channel. Take care.